Just a reminder, and I expect that Mr. Allgood is probably attending to this, but sign-in sheets that we need your signatures on. Okay, we call the case of Collins versus the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, my name is Charles Weber, and I represent Ryan Collins in this matter, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
We have two issues before the Court. One is a Fourth Amendment violation. The other is a sufficiency of the evidence. I'm going to focus most of my argument on the first issue and rely primarily on the written briefs for the second issue. It's fairly complex. The first issue is, did Officer Rose violate Collins' Fourth Amendment rights when he trespassed onto private property, curtilage of his home, and physically intruded onto his personal property for the purpose of conducting a search for evidence without a warrant? Okay. Our view is that this case is controlled by U.S. v. Jones and Florida v. Jardines. These two seminal cases just were recently decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2012-2013. I won't go through all the facts, but very briefly, let me summarize the day from Mr. Collins' perspective.
Can I ask you one question before you do that?
Yes, sir.
Because time, as you know, goes by so fast in these. In this situation, he had a picture of the motorcycle from the video cam on his police vehicle, and he'd seen this picture on Facebook at the point he arrived at the house. And the only difference in the Facebook picture, right, and this picture was the motorcycle was parked in approximately the same position in the private driveway, but it had a tarp or something on it. But he could still see the chrome that he'd been able to see in the other pictures, and he could see the extended, I'm not using the right term probably about motorcycles, but he could see a lot about that motorcycle. Why isn't that, along with exigent circumstances that he now knows your client is aware that he knows he's looking for this motorcycle, why isn't that enough?
That's a good question, Your Honor, and I think that we would concede that he had some reasonable suspicion that this may have been the same motorcycle. When he arrives at the scene on that particular day that he does the trespass, all he sees is the silhouette of the motorcycle under a tarp. He doesn't see the actual motorcycle. He's got some suspicion that it's the same one, and we'll concede that. I mean, the officers had seen it on the one day. He's seen the Facebook photos. But a reasonable suspicion that it's the same one doesn't necessarily give him probable cause to enter the property.
But by using the term reasonable suspicion, you're agreeing that it would meet the Terry standard. It would satisfy the standard for a Terry type stop. And I realize this was not ongoing traffic, but you're getting very close to the probable cause by.
I'm drawing a distinction here because what we're talking about is whether or not it's the same motorcycle as opposed to whether that is actually evidence of a crime. The motorcycle itself is not evidence of the crime. The crime was eluding. That's what he was charged, that's what he was trying to investigate. And the issue for the officer was the identity of the driver, not necessarily the identity of the motorcycle. So he had plenty of time to investigate the motorcycle and in fact investigate who the driver was. But the question is, and ultimately, even after he did his deed of disclosing the motorcycle and recording the data and checking it all out, he still has no probable cause to charge Mr. Collins with eluding. He never did. He still doesn't. He's never been charged with those crimes. So the answer is that the motorcycle itself is not contraband. He's not searching for contraband. The motorcycle is just a motorcycle.
Didn't he have some indication, though, at that point from the investigation he'd done that the motorcycle might well have been stolen?
There was absolutely nothing at that point that indicated that the motorcycle was stolen.
He didn't have the VIN number, I guess.
He did not at that point. He didn't get the VIN number until he pulled the tarp off.
But couldn't he see from the road in plain view, because the tarp didn't cover everything, the chrome wheels and the stretched out frame, and that it was parked exactly where the motorcycle was parked in the Facebook picture?
I don't know that it was parked exactly in the same spot, but I mean it was parked in roughly the same spot. I mean there were other vehicles that had been coming in and out of that driveway over that span of time. I mean the bike had been there for maybe a week, less than a week. But at this point, it was simply covered with a tarp. I mean, so it was not open to plain view at that point. The question becomes, and I'm not going to concede that he had probable cause to go up there and do what he did, okay? And I'm arguing that he didn't because it's not evidence of a crime. But assuming this court finds that he did have probable cause, the question is exigent circumstances. I think that is still a requirement in the law. And I know the Attorney General has argued that exigent circumstances are not required under the automobile exception. But the automobile exception applies only when vehicles are stopped on the road and there's probable cause to believe that there's contraband or some sort of evidence of a crime within the vehicle. Okay, every single seminal case of the United States Supreme Court, Carroll, 1925, Chambers v. Moroney, 1970, U.S. v. Ross, 1982, California v. Acevedo, 1991, and Maryland v. Dyson, 1999, all entail a stop of a motor vehicle on a highway and probable cause to believe that there's contraband within the vehicle. Interestingly, this argument was raised to the trial court. The trial court accepted my argument that the automobile exception didn't apply. If the court looked on page 119.
The cases you cite, though, aren't a situation where the automobile itself is sort of the contraband. That it's
I'm saying the automobile was not contraband at this point.
It's just a
motorcycle. She says, so I think the distinction that the defense is making is that he stated that the officer is not searching in the vehicle, he is searching for the vehicle. And Carroll obviously established that a search in the vehicle can be established when there's probable cause that the evidence will be there. In this case, the issue is what needs to be determined to search for the vehicle, not in the vehicle. So that was the distinction I drew, and the court accepted the fact that the automobile exception didn't apply. She found that there was probable cause to search for the vehicle, but I still argued that in those circumstances, he needed exigent circumstances to do so without a warrant. He had no exigent circumstances. He didn't argue there were exigent circumstances.
Isn't it the mobility of a motor vehicle that gives rise to this automobile exception, that it constitutes exigent circumstances because a motorcycle, a bicycle, an automobile can be driven away rapidly while someone's off getting a search warrant?
Could be, but in this particular case, Officer Rhodes had a partner with him, Officer McCall. He had already dispatched Officer McCall on another call to go to Jarman's Motorcycles to do some other investigation. Officer Rhodes actually set up a surveillance of the house so that he couldn't drive it away. And if he had come out and driven it away, he'd have pulled in behind him, checked the tag number, had probable cause to stop him at that point, and then probable cause to search. So, I mean, all of that would have transpired without him having to violate the law to get the information. That's the point I'm getting at. He also could have, I mean, if he wanted, he could have gone and knocked on the door. Said, hey, I see this motorcycle over here, and, you know, what can you tell me about it? Can I go look at it? Would you pull the tarp off for me so I can look at it? None of that happened. He just took it upon himself to violate the law. He trespassed on the private property. And by the way, he not only trespassed on the private property, he trespassed on personal property. In Jones, remember, the case was they trespassed on an automobile because they called the automobile in effect. In that case, the automobile was in a private parking lot when they put the GPS unit on it. It was still considered a trespass and a search. In the Jardines matter, they came into the curtilage of the home. They brought a drug detecting dog on the basis that they thought there were drugs in the house.
Just as there is no expectation of privacy in stolen property, is there an expectation that one is protected from a trespass as to stolen property?
Well, at this point, there's no evidence that it was stolen. At this point, he's just seeing what he thinks is the same motorcycle that had eluded him, but he has no clue that this thing is stolen.
I mean, is there even standing to raise that, given that it is a stolen bike?
I don't believe, I mean, at that point, if he, could he go to a magistrate and say, I have reason to believe this is stolen? I don't think so. He had no reason to believe
it. I mean, would your client be in a position to say, although it's a stolen bike, I want my property protected. It's not his property, so he doesn't have standing to even raise that, does he?
He's got standing to protect his property, and he doesn't know that it's stolen. That was the issue at at trial. He didn't know it was stolen. He thinks it's his property. He paid money for it. And in fact, it even came out in trial that he paid money for it.
He paid money, but the vendor said it to the purchaser, to the defendant, it's probably stolen because there's no registration.
The vendor was a little slippery on that issue. The vendor had said he bought the bike for $2,800. He sold it for $1,800 a month later. He had used it exclusively at a racetrack in Waynesboro, so he knew he couldn't drive it on the road, and he said it had frame damage, which would explain why it didn't have a title at the time. So it's true that when Mr. Collins bought the bike, it didn't have a title. And it's true that you can somewhat infer that's a little suspicious if it doesn't have a title. But if the bike is being used exclusively for racing on a racetrack, there's lots of bikes over there that don't have titles. They call them grudge bikes. They're just not suitable for registering and getting them titled for street use. That's what he called it. He called it a grudge bike. So what he said was, initially he said, yeah, I told him it was stolen. Then he said, well, no, I didn't really tell him it was stolen. I said, well, it might have been stolen because it doesn't have a title. And I said, well, did you really tell him that? And he says, well, no, I just figured he would know that because it didn't have a title. So it's not really clear exactly what he told him at the time. But the expectation of privacy is a Fourth Amendment issue, but the question becomes, does that even apply in the trespass line of cases cited here in Jones and Jardines? And the court is saying that it doesn't apply. It's an addition to. Expectation of privacy is a separate issue from the trespass issue. This is a property lines case. And as the court said, the Supreme Court said, one virtue of the Fourth Amendment's property rights baseline is that it keeps easy cases easy. That the officers learned what they learned only by physically intruding on Jardine's property to gather evidence is enough to establish that a search occurred. You don't even need to address the issue of expectation of privacy. So that's our point here, Your Honor. I see I have 3 minutes left. I'd like to reserve those.
That's fine. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Judge?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. Good morning.
I'm Michael Judge on behalf of the Commonwealth. I think what I'll do to start, unless the court has objections, is go down the points made by the appellant in their opening. He's conceded reasonable suspicion, but he hasn't made any kind of reasonable distinction between that and probable cause. Probable cause doesn't require the Commonwealth to have proved that this was the same exact motorcycle. Probable cause only required that the officer believed there was a probability or substantial chance of that. That's the case law of the United States Supreme Court, the Supreme Court of Virginia, and this court. In this case, the defendant denied ownership of the vehicle, denied knowing where this house was, even being showed a picture of it. Turns out later it's the house where the defendant is in fact living, so he's a liar. That's all that you can really say about that. But the motorcycle itself is unique. The officer testified that he was 100% certain that the vehicle in the Facebook photograph and the vehicle he saw when it was going 140 miles an hour down the highway was the exact same motorcycle. He talked about it as a customized motorcycle. He talked about it in great detail in the trial court, describing the parts that had been placed on the vehicle that made it a custom motorcycle. He didn't say that he couldn't see only the silhouette of the vehicle when it was covered by the tarp in the driveway. He said he could see underneath the tarp because the tarp does not go all the way to the ground. He described the chrome wheels that he was able to see. He described the unique silhouette of the motorcycle in effect. And again, all he has to do is say there's probability and substantial chance. Same house, same driveway, same position, same vehicle surrounding it in about almost the same time period. It had to be within 1 week. And the only thing we know about the change from the photograph to the time that the Facebook photograph to the time the officer actually saw the driveway itself was that somebody put a tarp over it. Who put the tarp over it? Who knew the officer was looking for it? The same defendant who had talked with the officer a short period of time before on the same day. So I think that there is clearly probable cause, and there's not even an argument about it in this case. The defendant can't concede it because if he concedes it, he knows he loses. The assertion that the only time the automobile exception applies is when it, a stopped vehicle on a highway is disproved by the case law. We cited the LeBron case on brief. Two different vehicles involved in that incident, two different cases. The LeBron case, it was a parked vehicle on the street that you're going back and forth to for drug deals. The second case was a pickup truck parked on a farm in a driveway. Sound familiar? This case, a car parked in the driveway, probable cause to believe that there was something associated with the vehicle. And it is not necessary that the item itself be contraband. Matter of fact, the very case that the defendant cites on brief, Hayden from the 1960s, indicates that the United States Supreme Court expressly disavowed the distinction that had existed prior to that time in the federal courts. In the federal courts, they used to make a distinction from what they called instrumentalities, fruits, or contraband. That was what the feds allowed their officers to go and seek. In state courts, there was a what they referred to as mere evidence, which that's what this motorcycle was as far as the officer was concerned. It was evidence. He wanted that so he could try and identify the culprit. You look at the actual facts in Hayden, the exigent circumstances that it obviated the need for a warrant was hot pursuit of an individual involved in a robbery. Officers go into the building. One officer goes downstairs. He goes downstairs and he opens a container because he's looking for weapons. The container happens to be a washing machine. Inside the washing machines, he finds the clothes that are the same as that given to them in the description of the suspect they've been pursuing. So he seizes the clothes. It's, again, it's mere evidence. Is it contraband? No. We all have clothes. But it's related to the crime. And at the end of the opinion, they said it was okay because he had probable cause, he had exigent circumstances, and the items he seized were able to help them identify the culprit. Same in this case. That motorcycle, getting the VIN number or a tag number off it, was going to assist the officer in identifying who the individual riding that motorcycle was when it went by him at 100 miles an hour and then sped away from it at 140 miles an hour. I think in both instances in this case, the probable cause and the exigent circumstances are satisfied. When you look at Jones and Jardine, Jones expressly said, government, you screwed up. You never raised all this stuff in the trial court, and you're trying to raise it for the first time in the United States Supreme Court. That doesn't work. We are not going to address that issue. In the Jardines case, you didn't have exigent circumstances. You had an officer exceeding the implied consent of walking to the door of an individual's home by bringing a dog with him. In the King case, you had exigent circumstances. It was decided by basically the exact same justices who decided Jones and Jardine. They had a higher percentage of justices in favor in the King case. Again, probably
can I ask you a little bit, yes. Mr. Judge, on this? I mean, the automobile exception sort of assumes, because it's so mobile, that there are almost inherently exigent circumstances. But here, you have not only that, don't you, but you have the fact that appellant knows he's now been questioned about this motorcycle. And so isn't that sort of not just inherent exigent circumstances, but actual exigent circumstances, because presumably he could move it very quickly?
I guess you could call it more exigent circumstances. But the officer actually in his own testimony, I think I referred to it as mobile in the brief, but his actual word was the reason he lifted the tarp was because the motorcycle was removable. He knew, I've been looking for this thing for 2 months, and if I don't go over and look at it now, I may never get another chance because it's mobile.
If he didn't have, if let's say the facts were a little different here, and appellant wasn't aware that they were looking at this motorcycle because of the Facebook page picture that had been shown to him and so forth, and it's on the curtilage of his property, would that be a problem for the Commonwealth?
I think the facts of this case are make it what lawyers and judges refer to as fact-bound to a certain degree. I don't think you're going to find many cases in the Commonwealth where you have unique automobiles. I was thinking this morning on the way in, I said, something tells me there's probably a few thousand black Toyota Corollas driving down the highway like I am this very morning, much less how many are actually registered. But if when I used to go to the Outer Banks more regularly, we used to go by Gravedigger on the side of the highway going down there, which is one of the monster trucks that my son loved as a young man. And something tells me if we were looking for Gravedigger and it was covered by a tarp, we could probably get a warrant. if it's covered by a tarp in a driveway and you have nothing else that you know about it, you can't get any distinguishing features on it, very close case, I would assume, hopefully, that most officers will go get a warrant. Again, it would depend on the facts of the case. Maybe the officer, instead of lifting the tarp, goes up to the door and goes, hey, can I look at that thing down there? Different case. Officer may have reacted differently. If the officer hadn't been having any success in trying to locate it in any way, shape, or form, again, different circumstances. You would have a weaker case for the Commonwealth. I don't want to say it can't be because, again, every case is going to have its own facts and its own statements associated with it, conduct, etc.
What if it were the same facts as here, but the tarp had completely covered it? You couldn't see the chrome wheels. You couldn't see the extended nature of the...
The extended frame on the back.
Extended frame.
So I actually found out that's what keeps it from rising up when you race them down the strips or whatever. But in this case, I think you may still be able to do it only because the silhouette is unique. The silhouette indicates it's a racing bike. And he did have the statements by the defendant that he didn't own a motorcycle. Well, here it is sitting in your driveway. So maybe still okay. Again, you're dealing with probable cause. He doesn't have to show it's the same motorcycle. If it's not a unique motorcycle, if it's a standard issue off-the-lot motorcycle, I think it's a harder case for a prosecutor to make or a police officer to make as to this is, I have probable cause to believe this is, the same motorcycle because there are just too many motorcycles in the world. But when you have a unique motorcycle and you're able to see parts of it that are consistent with what you saw before, I think that carries you clearly across probable cause. The defendant implicitly admits it because he says the officer should have gone to a magistrate. Well, why you go to the magistrate? Because you have probable cause. And he doesn't want to go full, tilt and do it. But that's his alternative argument is the officer, should have, gone and got a warrant. Well, the officer can't go get a warrant if he doesn't have probable cause. With regard to that specific argument, the United States Supreme Court, I believe in Ross, we cited on brief, says you don't have to. The officer does not have to delay and go to the magistrate to get a warrant. And this is like a unique aspect of search and seizure law, where the United States Supreme Court has made a decision that you have a lesser degree of privacy in an automobile. Automobiles, motorcycles are heavily regulated. You have to provide all kinds of information to DMV about them all the time. The Supreme Court of Virginia, many decades ago, and since then, and this court as well, has noted that you have a lesser expectation of privacy. As a matter of fact, in the old Supreme Court of Virginia case, the guy's going through a shop someplace, and he opens the door on cars that are in a public shop, and nobody had any trouble at all with that, and that's because that's where the VIN numbers used to be located before they moved into the dashboard. So I don't think there's any error on the part of the trial court in here. The defendant on appeal is talking about the fact that he exclusively used this for racing. Well, we know that's not true either because the defendant took the car, put a different tag on it after it had been spotted in July, and then took it to a local shop to get the tires changed on it sometime during the week preceding Officer Rhodes' discovery of the motorcycle in the driveway. So it wasn't exclusively used for drag racing. He was using it to get around, and he was trying to avoid detection. I think those are the primary points I wanted to make in regards to it. The court did bring up the issue of trespass and stolen property. It wasn't really discussed at trial. There was no ruling from the trial court on it, and it wasn't developed factually by either side as to what property interests they really had in this. The Commonwealth's evidence indicates that the defendant bought it, but we would argue with regard to the sufficiency aspect of it, that he bought it knowing that it was probably stolen, and then he conducted himself afterwards as if it were in fact stolen. And that's we detail those points on record. But as a general proposition, a defendant does not have a property interest in a stolen item. At the end of this case, if this court reversed us and sent it back, nobody's going to give the motorcycle back to Mr. Collins. It's not Mr. Collins' property. He has no property rights in it whatsoever. If you buy from a thief, you in fact suffer at the original owner's stuff. If you go back in the Hayden case, they actually talk about the old actions of replevin and trespass to return of your property. And that's because the government had a superior right to possess the property if it seized it than the defendant, unless the defendant could prove that he was in fact the actual owner of the property. Again, that gets back into all the stuff that we all hated in law school. But, I think at least that answered it. It was an issue, I think, to a certain degree in the Shaver case that that we cited. With regard to sufficiency, we've covered that on brief. If the court doesn't have specific questions, we would ask the court to affirm the judgment of the circuit court.
You talked about Jardines.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about the Jones case and what relevance that might have to this, the GPS placement while it was, I guess, in the driveway and, mm-hmm. and the court's focusing on the trespass aspect of that?
The problem in Jones, I don't mean to disparage the United States government too badly, but they didn't try it very well. They treated it as basically kind of a run-of-the-mill case, and I think anytime any prosecutor does that, they run the risk of missing something or not seeing things. I mean, I cringe every once in a while when I read records because I'm like, why didn't anybody object? Why didn't anybody, you know, develop this issue? I thought about that with regard to the standing matter in this case. But in Jones, the government's problem was that it was clearly acting in bad faith. It didn't abide by the warrant it got. It didn't abide by all these different things. One of the concurrences, I think, by Alito talks again about this issue about not raising this stuff. And he goes, look, you know, the government didn't even bother to talk about the fact that all these things that they did that were really wrong aren't required by the Fourth Amendment. They're required by rules. But since nobody raised it, you know, we're not going to talk about it. So basically, you had a poorly tried case on the part of the government, I think, and unfortunately, bad cases made, I don't want to say bad law, but it allowed them to reach the issue that they didn't reach in some of the other cases before. Matter of fact, they talk about distinguishing their different beeper cases when it's in the trunk and in a container, and it distinguished those cases by saying those beepers were not given to the defendant, they were given to other people, and then they gave the items to the defendant. So the defendant's rights were never trespassed on because if there was a trespass, it involved some third party and not the defendant in the particular cases. So they said, y'all have said the old expectation of privacy was the only thing. We never said that. And in these cases, we didn't have to because it wasn't an issue. And so they basically went back and said, pardon my time about to expire, I'll conclude quickly.
Go ahead and finish it.
Jardine's case said, we're not subtracting anything from Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. We're simply adding this aspect back into it.
Thank you, sir. Rebuttal, Mr. Weber.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very, very briefly, just several quick points. He cited a case, and unfortunately I was writing quickly. I didn't catch it, but he said in there they found probable cause and exigent circumstances and the fact that the items seized helped to identify the culprit. We don't have those things here. We don't have anything seized to identify him as the driver of the vehicle on the eluding charge for which he was investigating. That whether there's exigent circumstances, the question is whether there's actual exigent circumstances or whether they're merely saying the fact of mobility constitutes exigent circumstances. And we're arguing here the mere fact of mobility when it's parked in a private driveway covered up that there's not exigent circumstances.
That
the
was my question to Mr. Judge, and I'll ask it of you as well, Mr. Weber. Why don't you have exigent plus here? That is the mobility of the automobile that is the reason for the automobile exception, but you know, as you say, you're going on the curtilage of his private property to get to it. Why don't you have the fact that he's already been questioned about the motorcycle? They showed him the Facebook picture. They know he's very suspicious and is likely to come looking for it. Why doesn't that give you more exigent circumstances here?
Yeah, if he wanted to hide the motorcycle, he could put it in the backyard. You know, why leave it out front? He put the tarp on it probably to protect it from weather because he wasn't driving it. You know, that's the most logical.
But whether he had a tarp on it or not, or whether it was totally in a tarp, or even let's say it was in the backyard but within the curtilage. Yeah, why would there not be exigent circumstances given that he knows now? that they're highly suspicious.
Your Honor, the traditional exigent circumstances are hot pursuit. That's not here. Risk of destruction of evidence, escape of the suspect, or danger to the police. None of that is here. Reasonably believe that the occupant is seriously injured or in imminent danger. None of that is here. Those are the traditional exigent circumstances. Now, when a car is stopped on a highway and there's a possibility somebody might drive the thing off and there's evidence of crime in the car, you can say, yeah, there's a risk that they're going to lose evidence. In this case, the officer removed the tarp, gathered, and then retreated to set up a surveillance of the house. He didn't immediately go up to that door. He set up a surveillance after he trespassed on the property. He waited for Officer McCall. So he had ample opportunity to simply send McCall to the magistrate and get a warrant to trespass on private property. This is private, real property, not just personal property, but I'm arguing both, but he's trespassing on private property. There's no exigent circumstances here. It's not the traditional hot pursuit, destruction of evidence, or anything like that. He's in a position to control where that evidence is going to go. Like I said, if he comes out, he gets on a motorcycle and drives away, he follows him, he stops him.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We will come down and agree.